Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I'm going to be with you for about 55, 58 minutes today. I am very lucky, as you know, where you're doing kind of an infomercial session about the Pittsfield Public Schools and a variety of things and a variety of topics with a variety of very with administrators and people very knowledgeable in their field. And today is Stephanie, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, because when I finish with your name, you won't know who you are.
That's fine. So my name is Stephanie Wondriska Clark, and I'm the director of special education for Pittsfield Public Schools. And I've been in this position for about 10 weeks. I was appointed at the end of August, so I'm new to the position, but not new to the Pittsfield Public Schools. I was in another position as the out of district coordinator for 6 years before Jenny Stokes, pardon me, who was in this position, moved up to the assistant superintendent. And so I am now filling her position as the director of special education.
And you know, special education, if you could kind of give us a 30,000 foot definition or your definition of what is special education, because I mean, I'm not sure I fully understand it. And I know other after the last show with Jenny, so many people from in the supermarket, on the street, were texting, were asking, they were astonished at the number of children in special education.
So that's a really broad question, but a really good question. Right now in the Pittsfield Public Schools, we have approximately 1,200 students on IEPs, which are individualized education plans. Yeah. And that's sort of the blueprint for teachers and administrators and related services personnel, such as speech and language pathologists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists, to guide their work with that student. As far as any particular needs that the student may have in those areas. And the IEP consists of goals and objectives that are designed to help the student make progress in the general education curriculum. And that really is the focus of special education for students with disabilities who may need additional help to make progress or may need certain accommodations. Maybe it's a student who has trouble, is frequently distracted and needs a quieter environment to be able to focus to get their work done. So special education is designed specifically to help students with disabilities be able to access the general education curriculum so that they can sort of be on a level with their typical peers and make as much progress as they are able and live up to their potential. And the IEP is the, sort of that guiding document to help personnel to move that child forward.
And in today's day and age, I mean, I have to applaud all the people, yourself included, who I think, you know, we don't fully understand, do we, all the issues associated with special education, with education in whole. You know, I tell people more than you'd want to know. But I wish I got a dollar for every time I told him that, because I might be in the Bahamas this winter. But it's not our father's school anymore. It's not when I was in school. It's not when my son was in school. He's going, you know, he's in his late 40s. The world has really changed.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And just sort of the incidence of disabilities that we're seeing in our students with special education, we are seeing more and more students on the autism spectrum. And so we need to have programs in the district that address the needs of those students.
Right.
So, I mean, students with, for example, specific learning disabilities are accessing the classroom that would be the classroom that you or I would be more familiar with. Right. You know, with a teacher and maybe a supporting paraprofessional, you know, and maybe 18 to 20 students in that classroom. But our students with more severe needs, and again, that autism spectrum diagnosis is becoming more and more prevalent. And quite a few of those students have specific needs that we need to address through various ways, usually a smaller program. We often have ABA-based, which is applied behavioral analysis. So students are getting the curriculum in smaller increments, and we do what's called chaining and breaking down tasks, and really crafting a program designed to help those students be able to make progress and move up to their potential.
It's interesting you made that. We have autism in our family extended, and the child made leaps and bounds. Now, this is probably made leaps and bounds during COVID because it was one-on-one learning with no classroom distractions. He excelled. And to the point now, he's really much better in a regular classroom and around people. Maybe just that little, you're the expert, but I think people need to understand, again, and you just thank you for saying it, there are changes, and autism is one of them. And rather than deny it, accept it, and work, you have to work around it, but I would love to find out what's causing it. I have my own beliefs, but they're not scientific, so I'm not going to share them.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure there are a lot of scientific bases for why that particular diagnosis is increasing.
Right.
You know, I think, like you say, people have their ideas, and I think there are a lot of ideas floated out there, but I'm not sure that there's really, at this point anyhow, any scientific basis for that. But the best we can do for students with whatever disability, whether it's a specific learning disability, they may have reading deficits, they may have social emotional needs, kids on the spectrum, kids with multiple handicaps, physical handicaps. The goal is always to give the students the tools and the strategies that they need so that they can be integrated into the general education classroom and move forward with their peers. Because as we know, the inclusive environment is super important for kids. Because once they graduate, I mean, once they're in the community, I mean, like, we don't segregate the community. Everybody's together. And our goal in Pittsfield is to create a really inclusive environment for all our students. And again, there are times when students need a smaller, different environment, like you say, to give the students the tools and teach them the strategies that they need so that when they do move into that bigger inclusive classroom setting, they're able to navigate that because they have that they learned the tools in the smaller setting that they need to be able to do the work and participate with peers, you know, in appropriate social interactions and interactions with the teacher and other adults. So there's a lot of moving parts to special education, but the goal is always to move students towards that inclusive general education setting.
Yeah, and just a half a minute, I ran the Violent Youthful Offender Program for about three. I helped design it and then drew the short straw and had to implement it. And as you know, designing something's easy. Implementing it is not as easy. But I'm going to say almost 90% of them, 85 to 90%, had IEPs. And they all demonstrated some form of a learning disability, whether it was reading or reading comprehension, behavior was, I guess, where I'm going with this. Their behavior in school, out of school, on the bus, always ended them up in trouble. And I just think that some of it was their behavior generated the IEP. And I could be wrong, and I probably am, but because you guys do a lot of testing. before you do that. So, and that's, you know, I mean, people need to hear that. They just don't pull it out of the sky.
Right. So, I probably should have started with this, but I'll just give you sort of the 50-cent tour of the special education process, you know, soup to nuts from the beginning to the end. So when there are concerns about a student, they may be behavioral concerns. They may be, you know, reading, math. Again, there may be physical concerns. There may be cognitive concerns. Whatever that might look like, any stakeholder, that works with that student, it could be a caregiver, it could be the teacher, it could be parent, can request a special education evaluation. They would call, either get a hold with one of, we have instructional and accountability coordinators at all the schools, so they could reach out to one of those individuals or myself, and just sort of, you know, say, or in writing, you know, I have concerns about Johnny. His behavior is super challenging, and he's getting in trouble all the time. I think he may have some emotional things going on. And that request for an evaluation triggers, the school district to create an evaluation consent. And that's written to include the suspected disability, which with Johnny, my example right there would be an emotional impairment. And we would evaluate, our school psychologists would do a cognitive testing, academic testing, behavior rating scales, social emotional rating scales. So yeah, it's a whole battery of tests that initial request for evaluation triggers. And the psychologist, and there may be speech and language concerns or occupational therapy concerns or physical therapy concerns, and they would be included also in the evaluation consent. And that consent is created and sent to the parent. And once the parent signs that, it trips a timeline for us. And we have 30 days, 30 school days to complete those evaluations. And then we have an additional 15 days to schedule an initial eligibility meeting. So once the testing is done, we convene the team. That would be the child's teachers, the parent or guardian, an administrator, any related services personnel, a caregiver if they're involved, any individuals involved with that student. And we go through the testing and look at, there's an eligibility flow chart, and it asks, does the student have a disability? And it will say that Johnny does. We'll say, yes, he has an emotional impairment. And then it asks, is he making progress in the general education curriculum? And we'll say, no, because his behavior is getting him pulled out of class. And then the next question would be, does he need specialized instruction to make progress? And we would say, yes, he needs to be taught strategies and skills to be able to cope with behavioral things, triggers. And then that would trigger the whole, then we would say, yes, he qualifies for special education. And then we would write an individualized education plan for that student based on that student's need, and what the accommodations and goals that student would need to make progress. So that's kind of the process.
Oh, but thank you for that, because I want everyone to understand that it just isn't an overnight thing or a knee-jerk thing. There is a definite process with time constraints, and that's, I mean, I think that's one of the most important things. It doesn't l linger, and therefore s cause the child to be even more in de involved or in depth or whatever.
Yes.
And you made a, and there's a, I hate to do this, but you know, we just went through the budget, and to all of this, there is a cost. I mean, it part of the year budget for education, for SPED, for what, special ed, but it's, there's still a cost, and I would imagine that through the years, that cost has gone up.
Yeah, oh yeah, it definitely has. So we do, so public schools get a what we call a special education entitlement grant.
Yes, ma'am.
There's two, one for three to students 3 to 5, and one for students 5 to 22. And that grant is specifically for special education purposes. And then of course, chapter funding addresses, you know, we also have the per student cost, not cost, but the per student amount, just as typical kids, and then additional costs on top of that. So yeah, the costs have definitely increased. We also have some out of district students who, for whatever reason, can't be maintained in the district. Their behavior may be that extreme. But the state also, for students for whom we pay tuition in those out of district placements, we have circuit breaker claiming. So the districts, and this is for all districts in Massachusetts. Right. So there's a foundation amount up to, last year it was $50,000. Then above that, the state returns to the district a percentage over that foundation amount. So there are programs to offset the cost of special education. I'm not sure that they really keep up with the increase in cost, just like everything else. I mean, if you look at the cost of living, I mean, I think that everybody's like, whoa, you know, I go to the market and a dozen eggs cost me what, $5.99, yeah, whatever. And that wasn't the case, you know, 5 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago, but like everything else, costs increase. And yes, that makes things challenging, but our mandate through special education law, the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, is that if a student needs services, we have to figure out a way to provide those services. And it can be super challenging, and sometimes a double-edged sword. But we always have to go back to that mandate and the regulations and the laws that are guiding us and guiding our work.
And it's only because of my experience in the youthful offender program did I realize how challenging it is, because so many of them have multidimensional problems. Some of their behavior has caused them to fall back in school. Then they're 3 grades behind or 2 grades behind. And now they're big bulk of a kid in seventh or eighth grade, and they're reading at a second grade level or first grade. I mean, these are all things, you know, that involve today's education.
Yeah, absolutely. And those kids that have gaps in their education, and you're right, as they get older, figuring out the best way to address those deficits without making that student feel like, wow, you know, my peers are doing grade level work and I'm doing second grade work. Right. So trying to get really grade level instructional materials in front of all students, and teaching those students. So, and we say core plus more. So having all students in front of the general education teacher with high quality instructional materials in front of every student, because that's how they're going to learn. And then in that more, in remediation blocks, giving students the skills and the pre-teaching they need to be able to access that high quality instructional materials. And that what we call tier one instruction, which is what everybody, tier one is all kids. And all kids need to be in tier one instruction with those high quality materials in front of them. And then again, with the additional instruction in a smaller setting to be able to like pre-teach vocabulary. So if it's a upper level literature piece, then there's going to be more challenging behavior in the smaller setting, give the student a preview of vocabulary and teach them the vocabulary. So when they meet that vocabulary, that challenging vocabulary in the tier one classroom with that high quality materials, they'll read and say, oh, I know that word. I understand what that means. Additional strategies, sort of give them an overview of what might be coming of content. So there are a lot of strategies to address the students' deficits without putting them in like second grade material, which is not, and that doesn't feel good to a seventh, eighth, or even 10th or 11th grade student. But so sort of figuring out ways to be help them to access instruction and giving them the tools that they need to do that.
Yeah, sometimes I found, and you certainly can, this, you're the expert, I'm just a old fat bald-headed guy here asking questions, but I found that in my career that if we in any way, anything we did to help, they thought was demeaning, just complicated the problem.
Yeah, I mean, certainly attitude is always an issue, right? So it's trying to, right? And I think the best way to get around that, and it doesn't always work, but I think relationship building with students is huge, you know, and connecting with kids on a personal level, because then they feel like, okay, this teacher cares about me and cares about what happens to me. And I think that can turn that attitude around. Not with all kids. I mean, there are definitely some kids that they're not gonna go along with what the teacher says or what adults in the classroom ask just because, right? And those are the kids that can be even more challenging. But for the most part, if relationships are strong in the classroom and there's a congenial feeling in the classroom that everybody belongs and everybody should be there, then I think that goes a long ways towards addressing those sort of attitude pieces of kids that are like,
When I am around teachers, I did some student teaching, believe it or not. I kind of have minored in education, and but I tell them, and here's an example, and you feel free if you think it's worthwhile. This kiddo was having a bad time at home with the mother's boyfriend, who was an ex-con. And anyhow, there was some goings on, and he confronted the mother and said X, Y, and Z. The mother confronted the boyfriend and threw the kid out. So here's a 14, 15-year-old on his own, with his buddies, couch surfing, they call it. The other piece that I like to share, especially with teachers, is this. This kid all got detention every day. And when he came in, I interviewed him, and I said, "You're like proud of this." "Oh no, I just was a behavioral problem." And I'm thinking, I understand that you're 17 in a penitentiary. But when you get through the story, I said, why would you always want detention? Why didn't you want to go home?" And he had quickly turned and said, "Home, very cold, home. My mother's a crack dealer. So I've been beaten up by other crack dealers, crack addicts. Ready? School was the safest place in my life."
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that that is true for some kids, and that's why kids that you would be surprised that are coming to school every day are coming to school every day. And I have to say too that in a situation like that, and that's not unknown in our district, situations that are similar to that. So I think it's the school can't do everything, right? So there are other agencies that we work with when students are in a situation like that. So, we have the Department of Children and Families, DCF, to support students in a situation like that where they're homeless, trying to assist that student in maybe finding a kinship placement where they can stay. But supporting the student outside of school is huge too. And again, the school can't do every piece, but we do have social services agencies that we would try and connect that student with. Because, yeah, having a 14 or 15-year-old kid out on the streets couch surfing is not an ideal situation. And we don't want kids, obviously, once kids leave the school grounds, we don't have much control over what they do or say.
Absolutely.
But we don't want to see kids ending up in DYS custody or detained, in DYS because they've done something they shouldn't. Because it sounds like you know what that sort of school to prison pipeline looks like, and it's not, we want to keep kids out of that at all costs. We do have kids in DYS custody, we still for kids on IEPs, we still deliver services when they're in DYS custody, but working with social services agencies, we try to do everything that we can to keep students out of those situations. And, it's not an easy thing. And some kids just have it so, so challenging and so, so difficult. you know, that you've got a feel for those kids, and you can totally understand why, like in your example, a kid might be like, coming to school is the only stability in my life. And it's the only place where I can, you know, I know I'm going to be fed because we, you know, provide breakfast and lunch for kids.
Yes. Thank you to the legislature for doing that. That to me, because I used to be at this radio station used to be at the old Taconic.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes, it was in a closet. Most people didn't know where it was. It was in a closet, and at the time, Mr. Benjamin kept the door locked. No, I'm making it up. But I would walk by, especially Monday mornings, watch those kids get off the bus or run down that corridor to the cafeteria. You didn't have to be Einstein to realize the last meal was probably Friday at school.
Yeah, I mean, and so again, kids know that they're going to get fed and they're going to be in a safe place. So you can totally understand why even kids who you think would not want to be coming to school are coming to school. And we need to support that. We need to grow on that experience for kids so that they so that they connect with school, and not just on the level of meeting those sort of basic needs, but then being able to get into class and you know, to be able to work with the curriculum and work with the material and go
feel belonged
forward. But exactly,
a sense of belonging in the school body itself. Right.
And that's one of the Pittsfield's core values, is that sense of belonging for all students. Because, you know, if you go to class and you feel like you're sitting in the back of the class and the teacher never calls on you and nobody talks to you, that's not a great feeling, right? You feel isolated from your peers, and your chances of you coming back to that classroom decrease every day that you're in that sort of situation, that sort of isolated feeling. So with teachers and peers reaching out to all students and, you know, bringing everybody into the fold, so to speak, the incidence of students returning to class and being consistent in school increases. And that's what
I think, again, I know I repeat myself, but when you get to be 77, you can repeat yourself. It's not your father's school. It's not my school. It's not my son's school. It's really changed. These foolish things, I can't believe, I wish I had a dollar for every hour that you all in the school department, all of you, and this isn't a criticism, this is an observation, you spent trying to solve a problem that to me is real simple. Don't bring it into school. But then again, I'm pretty simple, but you know that by now. We have to adapt. In the military, they had a saying, improvise and overcome.
Uh-huh.
And I see it every day in my own life, the whole issue of just civility, perhaps.
Yeah, yes.
I'll tell you a quick war story. I was in the Big Y supermarket, and this lady, probably my age or older, ran right up the back of me with a cart and told me to hurry up. I was in a hurry. That she was in a hurry. Now, that hurt.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know? I think what you, Stephanie, the challenge for you and your teachers today in my opinion, not monumental, but certainly much more challenging than when I was in school.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the world that we live in now is far more fast paced than when you and I were in school. Yeah. I mean, I'm a few years younger than you, but not tons and tons of years younger than you. And, you know, I think the expectations.
Thanks for saying that.
I think the expectations were different, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. And the world we're living in, like you said, technology plays a huge part in that, right? And there's instant gratification, kids with their phones, kids with their iPads, and they're getting information in little, you know, 30 second bursts. And that's sort of what they're used to. And that's kind of what their attention span is attuned to, is those little those microbursts, and that makes it more challenging for them to be able to attend in a classroom of 45 minutes. And just the overall fast pace. I mean, I think that we are, our interactions with each other are, have changed too, partly due to technology, partly due to the everybody's overscheduled, everybody's moving so quickly. And then like in your example, the woman was like, I rammed into you because I need to get moving and you're not moving fast enough.
Right.
And, you know, I think we could all benefit from just everybody slowing down and putting our technology away and connecting as human beings again. So one of the things to sort of address that is Pittsfield does have a no cell phone policy this year.
Right.
Yeah. So it's no cell bell to bell. And I think it's really, really, really challenging for kids to give up that phone because it's their lifeline and it's yeah. their connection to that, to their virtual world, and not having it makes them have to connect with real people and peers and, you know, maybe sort of start to build yeah. actual relationships that they might not have had to do before. So it's a challenging world. I mean, my kids are in their late 30s, so I hear what you're saying. They sort of missed all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of glad of that. But fact is, we're living in the world we're living in, and we need to learn to navigate it in a way that's that promotes civility and kindness towards each other, and helps our students to be able to do what they need to do in school so that they too can make progress and fulfill their potential. You know, it's a lot. I mean, kids deal with a lot these days.
We got to take a break. We have to take a break. I say this, especially now, Veterans Day is right around the corner. I know it offends some of you. I've received your communications. This is my flag. A lot of my friends are buried under it, more acquaintances. And those, you'll see them in the cemetery. And underneath that lies a person who at some point in their life signed on the dotted line to die for this flag. Now, all I'm asking you to do is not to disrespect it. You don't have to jump up and down, but I'm pleading with you, please don't disrespect it. There's too many people have given their lives and are badly injured or whatever for that flag. And I don't think you have the right to disrespect it. That's me. Oh, by the way, in case you forget, the views and opinions that are expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department School Committee, Mayor Marchetti in the mayor's office, Pete White in the city council, and or the person riding south in the northbound bike lane on North Street. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. We are opening the doors and opening the windows to the Pittsfield school system and all the positive things they do. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sondrini.com. And from Park Square Productions. Park Square Productions provides high-quality video and audio productions for businesses and nonprofit organizations throughout the Berkshires. Find more information about Park Square Productions and what they can do for you at ParkSquareProductions.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10. On WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Hey, we're back. I'm going to have Stephanie introduce herself because, well, any of you have been watching me know I have problem introducing people whose last name are Smith, Green, or Brown. And hers has a lot of vowels and a lot of... Oh, isn't it? So, Stephanie, if you'd be so kind.
Sure. Again, I'm Stephanie Wondriska-Clark, and I'm the Special Education Director for the Pittsfield Public Schools. Again, relatively new to the job, about 10 weeks, but glad to be here.
And very knowledgeable, because she had how many years background?
Oh, I've been in education for over 25 years. So it's been always in special education. I was a teacher for a long time before I moved into the administration piece. So, and I loved being in the classroom. I taught middle school for years.
Oh, wow. Tough group too. And I don't want to get off on this tangent, but I understand the re-looking at all the grade separations and, you know, middle school as opposed to junior high, as opposed to 1 to 8 or whatever it is. So good luck with that. But we are talking now about, and why I'm happy Stephanie's on, is because I want people to understand all the good things they're doing in the Pittsfield school system. And one of the things that we did this about 6 months ago, and the feedback was phenomenal. People didn't know even with special ed, the number of kids in special ed. And all of these things cost money. Now, I used to be on a fixed income, but now I'm on a shrinking income. I buy the little Snickers bars, not the big ones. So, but my father, God rest his soul, used to tell my brother and sister and I, what you can do for your children when you have them is be a good role model and ensure they get a good education. Well, I'm a product of the Pittsfield school systems. I've been all over the world. So Stephanie Wilson, she's a product, and numerous other people. So before we throw stones, let us know the facts. You know, that's really weird, dealing with facts instead of rumors and innuendos. You know, being an old cop, though, I had to deal with facts. Stephanie's given us some facts. Stephanie, because it's a morning show, we'll do a little repeat about the number of kids and stuff that are in special ed currently.
Sure. So again, we've got about 5,000 students altogether in the district. And out of that 5,000, just under 1,200 are students on IEPs. So the number is high in Pittsfield. It's not a lot higher than statewide, but it is somewhat higher. And again, the identification process for students with disabilities to become a special education student. It is a process. I had outlined it earlier and I can go through it quickly. So there's a referral for special education and then the evaluations are done. And then the team decides whether or not that student needs special education services to make progress in the general education curriculum. And when we do that process, we try to be as careful as we can to not over-identify students as being students with special education needs. They may have a disability, but they may be doing okay in the classroom or doing fine. So even though they have a disability, that student might not qualify for special education because of the fact that they're holding their own and moving forward and making progress. So when we do an eligibility determination, we're really looking for a student that is not making progress, and that lack of progress is due to their disability.
Okay. Yeah, and disabilities, so often people say to me, well, you know, you got all those kids who are in wheelchairs. No, there's a variety of things that fall under the umbrella term of disabilities. I think we need to understand that sometimes it's emotional things at home. Stephanie, one of the things that I currently, and I interviewed Dr. Michael Fabrizio, he's a retired pediatrician. One of the things that I think that I noticed in the youthful offender program at the end of my tenure, because it then was becoming popular, was traumatic brain injury and how that affects so many kiddos. And some of it's from abuse. Some of it's just from falling down, hitting your head. All of these things are today up for study, up for learning, up for understanding so that we can educate the kiddos.
And there are so many. There are actually 13 disability categories associated with the with Disabilities Education Act. Things like we had talked about autism spectrum disorder, specific learning disabilities, which could be deficits in math skills, reading skills. It's frequently reading, like you said, emotional disabilities, neurological disabilities, which might include traumatic brain injury. Intellectual disabilities, students that are just cognitively lower than their peers and might need more modified instruction. We have students with multiple disabilities who may need a variety of services to be able to make progress in the curriculum. We have an other health category. So students often qualify for an IEP through that other health that have ADHD, attention deficit. So they're so easily distracted that it's just really hard for them to focus in the classroom. So they need accommodations like a quieter classroom. They may need less things on the wall, a more neutral environment so that they can concentrate on their schoolwork. Then we have students that might have low vision or a hearing impairment. So and that traumatic brain injury can impact kids in lots of different ways. That's sort of a wild card, whether it impacts a student emotionally, which is possible. It could impact them intellectually. It could make their processing, their ability to take information and work through it. It may slow that or change that. So there's so many disability categories, and we have to be sure that when we identify a student as having one of those disabilities, that we provide the services that they need to address the deficits that disability is manifesting in that student. So again, a lot of moving parts.
And I think the public needs to the other piece that I think needs to be brought is this is all governed by statute kind of situation and edicts from DASE.
Yes, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Yeah, which is huge. There's state statutes, federal statutes, and Massachusetts. Yeah. And the state regulations and the state laws tend to be more stricter than the federal statute. So, for example, we have students transition age from 18 to 22. So we need to be providing like vocational skills for those, some of those students. They could be with us even if they haven't graduated from high school. But the federal statute would be through age 21. So Massachusetts keeps kids in the school system for an additional year. And for example, some of those timelines that we talked about for evaluation consents are longer timelines according to the federal statute, but Massachusetts wants us to move faster to get students the services they need. So we have that, the 30-day timeline. And so, yeah, we are definitely, that's our guiding.
Right, right.
The statutes and the laws and the regulations are what guide our practice and make sure that we're doing things the way we need to be doing them.
and again, the reason I'm saying that, and Stephanie is reinforcing it, is because yes, they have to do that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It isn't, well, you know, they're sitting up there at Mercer and they're saying, well, we should do this. No, this is all pretty well documented, governed, enforced. And I want people to understand that the education, there is a cost to education. Really and truly, there's a cost to public safety. But going back to the children, Carmen Massimiano, God rest his soul, used to have a saying, pay me now or pay me later. And he was the sheriff, so figure out what he meant by that. But I'm often at a loss when I read some of the file, or I've read, I shouldn't say read anymore, I read some of the file, how long it took for some of the agencies to get involved. And that's not a condemnation of the agencies, but it's just, you guys have almost like a media intervention at the school. You see it, you do it, you act on it. If it's a behavioral problem, you're on it. If it's teachers, I have to tell you this story to you and the public. My wife was a school teacher for over 40 years. And we knew this lady, and this is kind of a sad story. Her kiddo wasn't doing well in fourth or fifth grade math. I can't remember. And so the teacher, being a teacher, sent over a long weekend some math stuff home for the mother to do with the kiddo. And I think it was fractions, maybe, if my memory serves me correctly. And we met her, and my wife knew her from other issues, other areas. And anyhow, she said, you know, I was so embarrassed. She said, you know, I quit school in the 10th grade, and I couldn't help her with it because I didn't know how to do it. So there's a lot of people kind of in that boat too. And I, you know, kiddos go home and say, well, have your mother or father help you with it. When they get to a certain stage of education, they maybe can't.
Yeah. And I think that that's really true. And we definitely have parents, you know, saying, especially, you know, for kids that might be doing more complex math or more complex literature pieces, and the parents are like, I really want to help my child, but it's really challenging for me. So, and for gen ed students, not even kids on IEPs. I mean, so teachers will do like office hours so students can come and connect with the teachers. We also, there are a host, and I hate to go back to technology, but there are a host of educational programs that can help students sort of through those rocky parts. And Pittsfield Public Schools has access to some really good online academic programs that can help students sort of get that remediation that they need at home, and they can connect to that. But yeah, I agree that that's definitely a challenge for parents. And we need to be thinking about that. And then, too, you just, when you had said pay me now or pay me later, that Carmen Massimiano had said, it just sort of sparked something in me that I'm going to share with you quickly.
Please.
So pay me now or pay me later. So one of the things that we're trying to do is sort of strengthen our age three to five programs. Cool. So with the feeling being, so we have early intervention for kids birth to three. The Pediatric Development Center here in Pittsfield works with those students and identifies those students. And then once they get closed around age 2.5, if the Pediatric Development Center or whoever, again, it's a referral, feels like that child might need additional support and maybe special education services, then they do a referral and we go through that testing process. So by the time that student is 3 years old, if they're a student maybe on the autism spectrum and they're going to need additional programming, that they have an IEP in place when they're 3 years old and that they are in an appropriate program at 3 years old, with the thought being that the more we address student need at a younger age and intervene when kids are really open. Right. You hear about teaching kids second languages when they're younger because it's easier for them. So it's sort of that thinking that if we address deficits and disabilities, whatever way they manifest themselves at a younger age, then that's going to help that student. And by the time they're in fifth grade, maybe they're you know, caught up with typical peers and they can access the curriculum on their own, or they may need supports, but less so than if we didn't catch that kid until they were like in second grade or third grade. By catching them when they're really little, we can get right in there and start supporting that student.
And it's so important today. As I said, my wife was a school teacher, and she, even when she finds out somebody's pregnant, she gives them a book. Because it really, reading is fundamental. If you can't read, and I, through my career, I have found people who have faked it that they could read until they had to admit, I can't read that. And I used to feel badly for them, you know, especially the adults.
Yeah.
So one last question. We're almost getting to the witching hour. And kids have had such special needs. They've had to pay for them for placement. They were placed out of the district.
Yep.
Is that still, are there any in that category now?
Yeah, we do have students that are placed out of district. They may need, like, we have some students with really complex medical needs that need consistent nursing care. So they're in a facility that can provide that nursing care consistently. And that would be a residential placement where they're there all the time. And they live there, basically. And we have students with, you know, pretty severe behavioral concerns that are placed in and out of district placement that specialize, that can provide that therapeutic piece, that counseling piece consistently. Like, as I had mentioned earlier, while the district has to, we need to pay the cost of that tuition for those students. But again, the state has the circuit breaker program that reimburses us up to 75% of those costs. So the state understands that needing to place a student in an out-of-district placement is taxing and difficult for a school district and really hits the budget hard. So the state has implemented that circuit breaker claiming to reimburse school districts. And they've recently added transportation costs to that too. So, you know, kudos to the state for thinking about that and helping school districts out with the cost of special education, because I know it's a concern for all residents, because it definitely adds to the school budget. But again, knowing that the state is trying to at least offset those costs to some degree is a positive thing.
Yeah, and it's amazing too. The number of, not amazing, but it's certainly to me, it's not scary, but it's disheartening, the number of kids, not the physically kids that need it, but some of the kids who so emotional, because I saw it. I mean, I saw them, they'd go off like a shotgun and extremely violent. But, you know, I was in a place where we could handle it. I mean, it wasn't a school.
Right.
I just can't say enough good about all the people, yourself included, and Jenny when she was there, who go in there every day and try to work to educate the kiddos and help them get through their issues. I don't want to say problems. I want to say issues. There was a piece not long ago, a couple months now, and it really infuriated me in the Eagles saying something about the new plan that's come up. And now we can, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, we can hold the school system accountable and responsible for the education of our children. Well, let me just give you my belief on that. It does take a village. It does take a village. It can be the bus driver, can be a role model, the coach, DCF. But yes, the school system is responsible for preparing the education and delivering it. They're not responsible for getting your kid to school or your kid doing their homework. So, and I don't say that to be a knucklehead, but I know how hard teachers work. I've lived with one now for almost 54 years. So every night for a couple hours, we were working. She was working and I was napping. But I can't, Stephanie, anything else you want to get up for the SPED programs and the Pittsfield school system?
I mean, I think just as sort of a quick overview is that, you know, we have programming for students with all disabilities. One of the things that I am, so again, being new to this position, there are some things that I see that we could do better. And one of the things that I see going forward is developing additional programming to be sure that we're really addressing the needs of all our students, depending on disability. So that's one of the things that I would like to work on going forward is adding in additional programs. You know, I think that the programming we have is really good. I think staffing can be a concern sometimes. And I think that's one of the things that we need to work on. And that's a Massachusetts thing. Districts all over the state are having some difficulties with attracting and maintaining staff. So that's one of the things that I want to work on as well. And again, with special education, there's so many moving parts. But the bottom line is that we want students with disabilities to be in the general education classroom, accessing the curriculum like their peers, and with special education services, giving the students the tools and the strategies they need to be able to be in that tier one classroom with their peers and accessing instruction. So that's our focus.
Well, I wish you the very best. I will say this, as I said to everyone, I'm always here for you. If you want to get something out to the public or I do announcements for things, just email me or go through Rose and send it. The only thing I would say, and you maybe do as part of your testing, do you do psychosocial?
Yeah, we call it psychoeducational, but yes. Yeah.
Because I was astonished when we would do it that I had some 17-year-olds that were psychosocially 28, 29, and then when you got into their life, you found out they were the parent.
Yeah.
For your siblings. And, you know, all kinds of, for those people who think it's easy, really, we're dealing with human beings. And one of the things with human beings is they're not always easy. I can't thank you enough for giving the time. Thank you so very much. As I said, I'm always here for you. If you want to publicize anything or just let me know and I'll put it out for you.
Thank you. It's been awesome. I appreciate the time.
Well, listen, it's my job is to let them. I could have retired anywhere. I love Pittsfield. I was raised in Pittsfield. My wife's taught in Pittsfield. She's taught other places too. But I feel sometimes we got to defend those who are working very hard and come under criticism. And what are they going to do? Fire me? They don't pay me. So there we go.
It's a win.
to everybody, and I know this upsets some of you again, but it's mine. It's my belief. I wish God would bless all of us, and now especially please No more division, no more anger, no more criticism, no more name calling. The die's been cast, so go on with your lives. And today, give somebody a call, make somebody laugh, do something nice for somebody. We're all in this together. And if we help each other and lift each other up, life will be, and I can promise you, a whole lot easier. Trust me. Trust me. Stephanie, good luck, and have a great school year. And like I said, I'm always here for you.
Thank you. I totally appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Talk to you soon.